Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. I'm here joined with our co-host, Coach Nick. Nick, how are you doing today?
I'm really good, Coach Steve. How are you?
I'm really well, Nick. I'm really well. Now, look, let's break the fourth wall here, Nick. So we record our podcast here on a Monday and they get launched on a Tuesday. So there is that little bit of time for production and to schedule it out and all that other bits and pieces that we do. But today being Monday, the 14th of February, it's Valentine's Day, Nick. So I don't know if you say happy Valentine's Day or whatever the trend is, but today is also episode number 52 of the Challenge Weekly Show. So 52, the 5 and the 2 almost make a shape of a love heart. So there you go, Nick. I don't know if we planned this out when we very first started the Challenge Weekly Show, but episode number 52 is in the shape of a love heart on Valentine's Day. What are the odds, Nick?
Oh, so I would say happy V-Day.
V-Day.
So, What's a V thing that you can do in the gym?
Well, Nick, there's clearly the V is our lats. So we're going to train our back on Valentine's Day.
There you go. That's perfect. So, yep, you got to do your V shape.
Your V shape, yep. Because there's no other shape that we're all striving for in the gym than to look like a big V.
A Dorito, an upside down Dorito.
An upside down Dorito. That's my life. My life goal is it looks like an upside down Dorito and be too big to walk through doors.
That's it. So keep working on that. And I hope everybody's just lifting weights. Obviously, you're post-Valentine's Day. So, you're in the future. But I hope you had a good one. And I hope that you worked on your V.
Your V, yes. Now, Nick, we are in week 3 of the challenge. Week 3 of the challenge, geez, they just roll on by. So we're a quarter of the way through so far. Wow, geez. And it's exciting to see in the challenge where we're watching challenges posting on our Facebook social hub. We're seeing people post on Instagram. We're reading journals and we're engaging with lots of people on the forum. And it's always inspiring to see what people can do in just a few weeks' time. So, you know, if you're noticing some really big changes in your body, awesome. You know, celebrate those wins. That could be on the scales, or maybe you're moving better, or you're becoming stronger, or maybe you're just environment starting to change and you're really getting into the groove of the challenge. But then also for those of you who may be wondering like, oh, when is this going to happen? When is this going to change? When's something, you know, significant going to happen in my body? I will invite you to be patient, especially for the next couple of weeks, be consistent in what we're trying to do. And then once we kind of reach into this kind of like week, end of week 3, week 4-ish time, that's when we can start to go, well, okay, is what I'm doing actually working? You know, I've tried this thing for, you know, 3 to 4 weeks. Am I losing weight? Yes or no? Well, no, I'm not losing weight. Okay, maybe the strategy that you're applying isn't working for you and you need to make those modifications. And that could be that you need to do something a little bit better. You need to train better. You need to get more steps in. Maybe you need to be more adherent to your nutrition plan, or maybe you're simply consuming too much food for what you need to make a change in your body. So as we kind of get towards the end of week 3 into week 4, if you're not noticing any change at all, so no change in your scale weight, and you can prove that by weekly averages, you've got multiple data points averaged out and going, okay, on average, I'm not losing any weight, not losing any management, you're not getting any stronger, nothing's changing at all, reach out to us. Reach out to us on the forum. Coach Nick and I are always here to help and help to problem solve where the challenge is for you, because we want you to make a change in your body. But it does take a little bit of time. So celebrate the wins if you are having wins. And if you're not, be a little bit patient, work on your adherence, be consistent with the program, and then reach out as we move into week 4.
That's right. You know, ask questions. If you are looking to lose weight, at some point the scale should be shifting as well. Like, let's keep it real. You know, if you've got body weight to lose, you do want to see the scale go down at some point. Don't hate me, but it's true.
That's right. Especially like short-term body composition changes. Like in the challenge, short-term, 12 weeks, we're losing body weight, we're losing body fat. We need to see a decrease in body weight if you're losing body weight. It's what happens. Long-term, like if we're looking at 12 months, right? If you're looking at 12 months, you can see like a recomposition occurring. Like you could kind of hover around maintenance. You could slowly build a little bit more muscle and lose a little bit of body fat. And, you know, you could stay around the same weight and see changes in your body composition. But in 12 weeks, if you wanted to lose weight, you have to lose weight by the weight going down on the scales. And the same the other side, if you wanted to gain weight, your weight has to go up on the scales. It's what happens in short term.
True. And see, someone like, say myself, I've been, you know, I'm coming up to, it'd be 11, 12 years of all of this stuff. And now my weight doesn't fluctuate too much. My body composition does. And, you know, I can see readings that are quite strange for the way that my body's actually looking. And that's long term. That takes ages. And then you've still got to be responsible with that data as well.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So look, if you are, you know, stressing about this out about the scale number, just remember that it is a data point where if it is going down, awesome. It's going down. Celebrate that. If it's not going down, especially in the short term, and your goal is weight loss, specifically weight loss, you know, we need that number to go down. And that it ultimately comes down to two variables to change, either consume less energy or fewer calories. That's how we measure a unit of energy, or increase your step count. And that's how we measure our energy expenditure. And the best way is our overall step count. So it's two numbers. And if you are not seeing changes in your scale weight, adjust those two numbers. And sometimes it's really obvious what number to adjust, where if you're having a really small amount of calories, you're starving yourself, you're hating life and your diet. Okay, well, look at ways to increase your step count. And then on the other side, if you're doing lots of steps, but you know, you're eating lots of food and you're like, geez, it's just so much, I'm barely even finishing this stuff. You know, that's when we can choose to obviously decrease our calories. So often there's a really obvious one, and there's no right or wrong on which one to increase or decrease.
Yeah. And also just make sure that you are with the steps that you've chosen, the steps that you actually are doing, that you're inputting your daily steps into your daily check-in. You don't want to fool yourself. Not saying that anyone is, but you don't want to go, I do 10,000 steps a day, but then you're averaging about 6,000, because that will make a little bit of a difference. You know, that's probably about an extra half an hour's walk. So that makes a difference over the course of a week. That's ages.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, like I see that challenge come up all the time where individuals be like, oh yeah, you know, I get enough steps because I'm you know, on my feet for 8 hours a day at work. And it's like, okay, like, I'm sure you do, but we don't know what that number is. You know, you could be standing around and maybe you are getting 6,000, 7,000, 9,000, whatever it is. But, you know, on an average throughout the entire week, you know, I wonder what that number is. Are you consistently averaging, you know, 10,000 steps? Or on the weekends, are you tired? Maybe when you get home, you like to sit down because you've been standing up all day. So we don't know what that number is if we're not tracking that number. So I am going to recommend that you, if you haven't already, start to collect information about your physical activity, how many steps you do a day, and then start collecting information about your body weight changes. And use that data, use the daily check-in tool on your nutrition workbook so we can get a good understanding of where we are. And then once we know where we are, that's when we can make changes to where we want to go.
That's right. And if you're like, oh, hang on, I haven't been doing this, you just start now. Start right. The second that you hear this and you'll be fine.
That's right. That's right. Nick, let's talk about some key dates coming up in the challenge. So probably the biggest one that's around the corner is the week four check-in. So the week four check-in, that opens up on Friday, the 25th of February. So that's in about 2 weeks from now. And that's Friday. And then on that 25th of February, that's when the new weeks 5 to 8 training templates are released. Okay, so you've got the weeks 1 to 4 training templates. So on Friday, the 25th of February, the new weeks 5 to 8 training templates are released. And of course, the week 5 starts on that Monday. So you've got the weekend to kind of like look at the program, check it out, what's going on, blah, 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 blah. You've also got the nutrition workbook. So we transition into weeks 5 to 8 on the nutrition workbook. And you will notice some changes in your nutrition workbook as we transition to week 5 to 8. There will be a slightly lower calories if you're in a fat loss, lower calories if you're in a weight gain, because we're slowly tapering that weight gain, bringing the calories down slightly. And then if you're following a maintenance program, those calories aren't changing consistently where it is. That number may scale up and down depending on your body weight changes and depending on your physical activity levels, how many steps you do. So the program reads all the information that you've put in weeks 1 to 4 and then averages that out and then updates the calorie prescription for you. So weeks 5 to 8 around the corner, kicking off on February the 25th on Friday.
Wow. Can't believe it already.
Already week 4. Now you have up until week 8 to do your week 4 check-in. So there's no rush to do your week 4 check-in. You have the entire week 5 to 8 period to do your week 4 check-in. To check-in, you just need to upload a progress photo of yourself. So progress photo, you don't need any newspaper or check-in document or anything like that. But you know, for your own records, it's really nice to almost recreate that start photo. So think about where you did that week 1 start photo, the challenge start photo. Maybe you did it against the white wall, or maybe you did it outside against the bricks, or wherever you did it. Try to do the same style of photo. Maybe you wear the same attire, like maybe if you are in your underwear or a pair of shorts, or you know, a certain crop top, whatever you're wearing, try to recreate that photo, because that's when we can make a really clear comparison between that week 1 and week 4 photo, especially if they're similar situations.
Yes. Well, I also think personally, it's really awesome when you see the finished product, everybody just wearing the same kind of clothes, because then you can sort of see the changes there. And yeah, just be really mindful, because it's your brand. You're representing yourself. You know, you want to, it's like you're showing up at work or something. So how do you want to best represent yourself?
That's right, Nick. And finally, we'll say that as we transition into week 5, so after that week 4 check-in, that's when the ability to change your program closes. So at the moment, you could change your program as much as you like, but as we move into week 5, you will need to commit to a program. So the ability to change a program no longer happens. So if you're currently following, let's say, the Get Strong program, and you really want to follow the Tone and Shape program, and your program is currently reflecting Get Strong, as we move into week 5, you will then see the week 5 to 8 Get Strong program. So you won't be able to see the week 5 to 8 Tone and Shape program. So make sure your program does reflect what program you actually want to follow. We know that many people want to have like a little sticky nose of what the other program is doing, what, how it all works, how it gets put together. Now on your nutrition workbook, you can, you know, change the nutrition workbook as much as you want. It's very open source. You could change lots of the numbers. You could change the percentages of, you know, how much of a deficit you're in and those types of things. I will suggest that you stay consistent to the strategy that you're following. So if you're following, let's say, a build muscle strategy, I would suggest that you follow that strategy and you don't try to override it and follow a different strategy, because that kind of just changes the strategy that we're trying to apply. So yes, you do have the ability to change it. My advice is that you don't change it. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. So just because you can doesn't mean that you should.
That's right. That's right. Because you know, the best way to stay stagnant is to constantly try to change lots of things.
Yeah.
And that's what we see a lot in the perpetual intermediate. So the person who's been training for, you know, let's say a year to 10 years, and they don't really see any big change because they're the perpetual intermediate. They constantly, you know, program hot. They, you know, don't really progressively overload. They don't, you know, stay on the same program and try to get better at certain things. So they're kind of like consistently and perpetually staying this intermediate, and they never really graduate into this advanced category. And we see it a lot. And I'd say that, probably a good like 75 to 80% of people in the gym are the perpetual intermediate. So don't be the perpetual intermediate. Stay consistent to a program, finish the program, get better at those activities, get better at, you know, your strategy to your diet and whatever it is, so that we can eventually transition into a true advanced trainee. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of programs out there are designed in a way to keep you there. And I don't want to diss anything, but I'm just saying some places are going to throw a million things at you, because you'll never know what's going on, and you'll never know what's made you progress and what hasn't. And that's sort of why you keep showing up. But we want you to progress. You know, we want you to dominate. We want you to be afraid every time you go into the gym, in a good way.
The good old scared of the gym. Love it. Nick, tell me, how's your training coming along? Kicking goals?
Well, I was just thinking about that because, yeah, I'm kind of getting to the pointy end where everything's getting pretty tough. You know, I'm going through one of those phases where, everything's getting pretty tough. So it's a bit scary to show up every time. I have to visualize those lifts going down or up. And, there's some other bits and pieces that have quite a bit of volume, glutes and things. So every time I'm going there, I have to really talk myself into it. How about you?
Good. I am competing next month in a powerlifting show.
Oh, well, that's exciting.
So I'm just kind of just a week into my peak week or peak prep. So a peaking program is when, you know, you really finely tune a lot of your kind of one rep lifts. So I wouldn't say one rep maxes, but, you know, you're really working on singles and doubles. Nick, you've done them, you've done peak programs before. But they get kind of fun, but then they also get a little bit I wouldn't use the word stressful, but when you start to see big numbers and you're like, oh, Jesus Christ, like I've got to like try to pick this thing up. And yeah, sure, it's always fun doing singles, but then they can also really beat up your body. So it's this fine balance of, you know, getting some like high load in with lower volume so you don't beat yourself up, so that, you know, you can really work onto this competition. So that's next month for me. And yeah, it's just always fun, but I can definitely get around this idea of like a little bit of anxiety when you're trying to like hype yourself up to go and train.
Are you going to wear a Max's t-shirt?
I'm going to have to wear like a Max's t-shirt under like the little powerlifter little onesie.
Yeah, that's
suit
right.
Thing.
Have
yeah,
you got one of those?
Not yet. No, it's in the mail. It's on its way.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Can you say where it is or anything like that, or will you reveal to us, or will there be too many stalkers?
No, you'll find out. You'll find out.
I think I probably can guess. Most things in Melbourne happen in one little spot.
No, it's going to be good. It's going to be good. So, it's going to be the APU, the Australian Powerlifting Union, because a lot of people ended up boycotting Powerlifting Australia because of a bit of drama, but that's okay. So APU, so it's going to be in Noble Park at Interperformance. That's going to be fun next month.
I'm very excited for you.
And yeah, who knows?
Maybe George will be watching.
Yeah, well, see, it's tricky, right? Because, you know, a powerlifting event is long. It's rah, 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 rah. Baby George, you know, he needs his nap. So I don't know. It might be better if he doesn't go to it because he's still little. He's only 5 months old. So little baby bean needs to sleep.
Well, yeah, we might have to, Di and I might have to come and support you and take some footage for baby George.
So good. Look, Nick, let's move on to our non-scale victories, our NSVs for the week. Yes. So NSVs. Non-scale victories, where we're celebrating those victories that aren't on the scales. So Nick, take us away. What NSVs have you found this week?
All right. So may I just say also that people are really getting into the spirit of wanting to appear on the podcast with their NSV. So I like to go through and say, yep, you're on, because they like it. So Ayla Ramsey, hello. Welcome to your feature. So Ayla has written, I absolutely love my nutrition spreadsheet. So that's always good. Especially love being able to put all the specific brands of food I use, so I'm getting the exact servings for my meals. This week I had lamb roast, air fryer pizza. I think it's bruschetta, poached eggs, if that's the one, if this is the Italian one, and loving my hummus and carrot sticks. Ooh, what's on your plates, everyone? Loving the food inspiration in this group. So I took this as a non-scale victory because I love the fact that she's interacting with the spreadsheet. She's getting the most out of it. She's putting her own spin on it, which we always encourage people to do. So, be involved in the process. Don't just trust the process. Become the process. And, the meals sound really cool. So well done, Ayla.
How good. How much did you want to say bruschetta with your hands, Nick?
Yeah. Well, I did do the sort of hand, but then I put it away. I'm trying to be more Nordic. That's my other side. So they're really refined and really like chilled. So I'm Viking.
You Viking, Nick.
Yeah. Half Viking, half Roman. So someone's going to die. All right. So the next one that I've found is Hannah Lee John. Oh, my gosh. I love this one because Hannah says, not even a week ago, I posted on Coach Nick's live video that I wanted to deadlift between 20 to 30 kilos. Between two kids, a back injury, and just life, it had been a long time since I'd even wanted to try. Well, today I thought at the end of my workout, why not? Did 24 kilos and made it a set of 10. So, I mean, that's crazy talk, you know, straight into the 10. Need to invest in higher weights for the gym, time to fuel. So how awesome is that? I was talking about goal setting in my live, and then Hannah, she said, I have got a goal. And I said, look, Hannah, just write it down right now. And then she did, and then it came true. So, like, that's all live and in front of our eyes.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. And especially, you know, the goal was to do between 20 to 30 kilos and then did 24 kilos for 10 reps. So yeah. Confident that you could probably get more than 30 kilos out if you did 24 for 10 reps.
I know. Like, if we were to get a 1RM calculator out, we'd have to say that you'd be about 37.2 or something.
Something like that. Yeah, yeah, really, yeah. Good.
But don't try it, okay, because that's, yeah, you've got to just build up to that sort of stuff. But look at you. That's awesome. Love it.
That's awesome, Hannah. Yeah, kicking goals.
Yeah. So this one here is from Danny Burnt. And Danny writes, so I'm a bit slow off the mark. I've been using the nutrition template so far and have only just started dabbling with the Google Sheets. I'm blown away by how great it is. So customizable. My problem is nutrition. And previous challenges, I started to go off track because I don't like certain foods on the plan. I love how you can easily substitute foods you like and it calculates the amount for you. That's exactly what I've wanted as a guide. So another one that's loving the nutrition, the template, and I'm really happy about that. And you should be very happy, Steve, with all of the work that you've put into it, that that people are enjoying it, that they can find that flexibility.
That's awesome, Danny. I'm glad you're enjoying it. And yeah, look, it did take a lot of sleepless nights to kind of learn how to put that together. But yeah, I'm glad that it's a tool that you're able to utilize. And you know, between Danny and Ayla, who, you know, have been playing around with their templates and, you know, adding foods in that they like eating, that's the point of dieting. We want to do something that we enjoy, because as soon as you don't like dieting, gosh, like, what's the point of it? It sucks. No one loves a diet that you don't enjoy the foods on. So that's the whole point of it. So I'm glad that Danny and Ayla are able to enjoy that there.
Yes, well done. That's a testament to you and all your formulas. And yes, your brain needs to just stay with us, because you're the one that's got all those.
No, so good. Look, I found a few NSVs this week. So the first one goes out to Joanne Sadler. So Joanne, we know, is having lots of challenges within her personal life, but loves sharing a lot of her stories on our Facebook social hub. And she writes, NSV was in bed just after 10 last night. I haven't managed that for months, which is just in itself just a huge NSV, where, you know, we often talk about getting better sleep and going to bed earlier and such, but, you know, sometimes we just simply can't. You know, we've got work, we've got kids, we've got, you know, house duties, all the things and bits and pieces where we just can't simply get to bed before 10. And if we did, you know, maybe our brain is buzzing and wired because we've just done 100 things. So, you know, it's awesome that Joanne is able to get to bed just after 10, which is just an absolute win. So congratulations to her.
Good on you, Joanne. I know that you've been kicking goals in this particular challenge, and you know, you're well on your way now. So you keep going. Go, girl.
The next one here goes to Glenn Arnold. And this is more of like an image type NSV, but he writes, we feed our bodies, we train our bodies, don't get so wrapped up in it that you forget to feed your soul. I love that. It was deep, feed your soul. And he goes, my soul food is surfing with some cardio. A great morning at Kira Beach. Thank you, surf gods, he writes. And I love this because it just reminds us that, you know, we train our bodies and, you know, we're trying to do this fitness thing, not for the outcome of, you know, just fitness. You know, not all of us love to do deadlifts to do more deadlifts, right? Besides, unless you coach Nick, right?
Well, like,
you know, we are, you know, training our bodies so that we don't need the gym. So we're training the bodies in the gym so that we can go and do things like surfing, so that we can go and do things like play with our kids or, you know, whatever activities you love to do. And it looks like for Glenn, he loves to go and surf. And I don't know about you, Nick, but I'm a pretty average surfer. Whenever I go surfing, it's more like paddling. It's more of a shoulder workout than anything else because I'm just constantly on the board. But yeah, give me into the snow any day, but the beach, not too much.
Yeah, I wouldn't be super relaxed surfing. I'd be probably a bit scared, but I certainly understand where Glenn's coming from with all of that. And yeah, you know what? Ultimately, it is about your quality of life, all of this. We can talk about body composition and everything like that, but it's also, it's quality of life. So whatever that means to you, that's what you're trying to achieve.
Next one here goes to Tanya Bandy. Tanya Bandy, and she writes, dragged myself around all day, so tired. Got home from work at 7 p.m., smashed a workout, #NSV. And I love that, where, you know, for many of us, if we are going to work all day and we get home and let's say 7 p.m. at night and you're like, geez, what a day. It takes a whole lot of energy to kind of keep on going and go and do a workout. So that's a huge NSV for Tanya. So big congratulations to her.
Well done. Well done, Tanya. You've achieved what, you know, 50% of people at least wouldn't do. They would just say, oh, it doesn't matter, I'm too tired. So
that's right.
Remember, every time you say that, it adds up.
That's right. Well, look, a big congratulations to all of our NSV participants this week. If you're experiencing NSV, let us know. You can post about it on our Facebook social hub. You can post it on Instagram, or you could post it on your journals. If you are posting it on places like Instagram, make sure you use the hashtag We Are Challenge or Max's Challenge 22 or Maxine's Challenge 22 so that we can see it. Or you could just tag Max's Challenge or Maxine's Challenge. We'll definitely see those ones there. But we're always looking out for NSVs. So post them, let them know, and celebrate when you see them.
Absolutely. We love them. Thank you, everyone.
Nick, let's move into our next segment here, the Coach's Corner, where we offer our tip for the week. So, Nick, take us away. What advice do you have for us?
Hi, everybody. I'm going to tell you a couple of stories. So I'm going to talk today just a little bit about the effect of cardio on your hunger and why excessive cardio might be actually halting your progress. Not really from a point of view of what I always talk about, which is that, you know, you can get efficient at it and all of that. This is a little bit different. Now, let me preface this by just saying it's not about doing your 10,000 steps, okay? So that's not in the realm of cardio. That's just basically what you need to do for everyday life to live, to fulfill your commitments in the challenge, all of that. So we're not talking about that. That isn't something, like if you do your walk nicely or if you walk around all day, you probably won't notice that you are ravenous after it. It's just something that your body will do. You might feel a little bit peckish, but you're not going to have that hunger that people might relate to right now when you say, a few of us within the challenge, including me, for some weird reason, this is why I thought of this today, we've been doing the Stairmaster. And I can't even explain to you the hunger that beast of a thing brings to you after you've done it. Like you could do it for 20 minutes, you push yourself so much, you're sweating. It's certainly great for your cardiovascular system. But the problem is, if you think you've burnt a certain amount of calories, and I think that you're going to chat about that later with smartwatches and things like that, but then you go and you eat everything that's in sight because you've got that ravenous kind of cardio hunger, you'll actually end up being the same. So I found this thing on Instagram. Oh, geez, that's really deep and meaningful. But a study was done and it was about, so I'll just say the study was McNeil et al. So that might help people. But it's actually, somebody wrote, the most important consideration for exercise may not be how many calories it burns, but how it impacts hunger and cravings. So many don't realize that their overeating habit is actually directly related to their over-exercising habit. Now, believe me, I can tell you just no study needs to be done because I know that when I was doing spin and I was in my heyday of doing spin and lifting all the weights and everything, I would say that I probably had one of the worst body compositions that I've ever had simply because I wanted to eat the house down. So in a way, if you're doing cardio like that for body composition purposes, try cutting it out for a couple of weeks, not cutting out your steps, but cutting out all the Stairmasters, the spins, other stuff like that. I know you might enjoy them for your mental health, but if you're gutsing like 10 peanut butter sandwiches after because you're just absolutely ravenous, then it's going to undo your body composition. It just, the problem is, so what I read in this thing was in a year-long study on postmenopausal women, participants did 30, 45 or 60 minutes of treadmill jogging 5 days per week without changing their diet. At the end of the year, only 25% lost weight. Frustratingly, 50% saw no weight loss at all. And shockingly, 25% of participants actually gained weight. But why? The reason is exercise caused overeating to such a degree that it matched or exceeded the energy expended from the exercise. In other words, overeating, overexercising causes uncontrolled eating in a sizable proportion of people. So stop using exercise in terms of cardio to drive weight loss. That's the take home. So I just wanted to let everybody know that, simply because I've been living that recently, because I've been doing this Stairmaster challenge. And only for me, it's because I want the same feeling as I had when I did spin, and I do it after my weights. But what I have to do is be very, very careful that I do not come home and eat like 10 baguettes with whatever's in the house, because I've got all that stuff in my house and normally I'm quite good. But I can tell you now that cardio hunger is like a hulk coming out of your body.
I definitely relate to that. When I was doing my marathon training and when I was doing the 10-20k runs, I'd come home and I'm like, geez, I'm so hungry. My only caveat to that is that there are some individuals who don't have that response, where that study that you quoted there, Nick, suggested that some individuals have the response where they do lots of cardio and the way that they respond to that is that they become really hungry. Others, they have the opposite response where they lose their hunger. So it's a tricky one, but you may be that type of person that, if you are using cardio as a form of energy expenditure to drive weight loss, that might not be the best strategy, because you are that individual that wants to eat back those calories because you have this huge drive for hunger. So definitely a tricky state, because there are others that when they do lots of cardio, the last thing they want to do is eat, especially afterwards. But usually after that body calms down in the later days, that's when they kind of eat more. So what I mean by that is, if you did a really hard cardio session, you get home straight away and you're like, the last thing you want to do is eat something. Your stomach's churning, all those things. But then maybe a few hours later, that's when you want to eat the house down.
That's right. And you will know without any study whatsoever which group you fall into, simply mm-hmm. because if you're someone who's been trying and you're like, I'm going to do the Stairmaster after my weights, or just for that reason, because you think, oh, it's going to burn those extra calories, but then nothing's changing. Or people that used to come to my spin class for, like, when I was teaching maybe for 6 or 7 years in a row, the same class, and they looked the exact same.
Mm-hmm.
Those sorts of people where you go, you're not doing anything wrong. You're probably actually in that group that just naturally eats at maintenance. You're just mm-hmm. trying to find that way to just keep your body not going into a state of just distress, I suppose.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Just interesting. Because, there's heaps of people at triathlons that look absolutely ripped AF, like they've got abs on their abs, so it's not for everyone, definitely, but just for anyone that's going, look, I'm busting my ass for an extra hour after my workout and I can't see any difference, it could be that.
Like that old saying where it's really easy to consume calories, really hard to expend them. Where you could spend an hour and try to slog off 100 or 200 calories worth of energy, because that's all it really is in that hour. But it's really easy to eat 100 or 200 calories of food, and that could just be like 2 pieces of fruit, right? If you're using your energy expenditure as a way to drive that change in the energy balance, it could be fleeting, because you could very easily and not think about it, eat back those calories and more, which, just defeats the purpose.
That's right. And if it's not for body composition and you're doing it to feel good or you love it or for a challenge, then that's completely different. Mm-hmm. Go for it. But, yeah, it's just a little pointer that I thought was relevant, because a lot of people go, I'm doing so much, and it could be that.
Nick, I want to talk a little bit about a phenomenon called intercept fatigue. Okay, and let's start with a little story. So the story is, Nick, I always, once upon a time, I was always afraid of the bench press. So going underneath the bench, the barbell, I was scared it's going to crush me. I was scared it's going to crush me, then roll into my neck. I was always scared of it. Now, probably like my favorite exercise. I love doing bench press, and I do a lot of bench press, and I think I'm actually okay at the bench press. Anyway, so back in the day, I used to avoid the bench press, and what I did instead was the dumbbell chest press. Okay, so I used to do dumbbell chest press, and I was training with the bros, right? Training with the bros, and it was always 3 sets of 10. That's what you do on the dumbbell chest press. 3 sets of 10. If you don't do 3 sets of 10, you suck. Yeah. So what I would do. Go to do my dumbbell chest press. I'd grab like the 25 kilo dumbbells and I'd go for my 10 reps. And as I'm going through my 10 reps, I get to rep, you know, number 8. And I kind of think, oh, well, I could probably do a few more. I probably get, you know, 12 or 13 reps. But it's like, oh, well, I've got to do 3 sets. So I've got to like pace myself. So what I'll do is I get to rep number 10, stop, put them down and go, oh yeah, that was all right. You know, I'm ready for the next set. Set number 2 comes in. I'm doing my chest press. Getting up to rep number 7, rep number 8. I'm like, oh yeah, this is actually getting a little bit difficult. And then I get to rep number 9, bust out rep number 10. Cool, great. I've done 2 sets of 10 now. Then as I get to my 3rd set, you know, that's when I start to feel a little bit tired. So what I do, I'm going through rep number 5, rep number 6. And I go, oh, geez, how am I going to get to rep number 10? So what do? I start to cut the rep a little bit short. I start to like bounce the rep a little bit. I start to like shake and wobble and get itself up. And then, you know, have like a couple of seconds breath of, and then, you know, go myself into the next repetition. So I was able to get 3 sets of 10. But the first set, I cut myself short in the total amount of reps I could do. The second set, I struggled to get to rep number 10. And then in the 3rd set, sure, I got 10 reps out, but I changed the tempo. I changed the range of motion. You know, I did a lot of what we call pseudo progression, which I spoke about in last week's Coach's Corner to kind of get at those 10 reps. Now, the problem that I was facing was that I was unable to see progression in my chest press for a really long time. I was unable to grow my chest. I was unable to get significant stimulus from my body because what I was experiencing was intercept fatigue. But then what I was forcing myself to do was to stay at the 3 sets of 10 repetitions. So I want to talk about this concept and understanding the phenomenon of decreasing reps intersets, in between sets. Okay, so decreasing your reps. So what would have been a better stimulus for me was in set number 1, if I did something like that 12 to 13 repetitions, then set number 2, I did maybe 10 repetitions, and then set number 3, I stopped at 8 repetitions. So it was a decreasing rep scheme. So like, you know, 12, 10, and then 8. Okay. And this works really well in a rep range. So instead of focusing on, you know, just a number, a round number, which is often 10 because it's a nice round number, 10 reps, you know, working on a rep range, okay, of maybe let's say 8 to 12 repetitions. And we're becoming comfortable with the idea that as we progress in our sets, we're doing fewer repetitions because that's the point of it. Okay. So let's talk about a few assumptions as to why this might be actually really good for our body. So the first one is that when we are training, we're trying to train close to technical failure, okay, where we can't do another repetition on the target muscle. So let's say in the chest press, you know, it's really easy to maybe like roll a little bit, change our elbow position and use our shoulders more, or change the position, use our triceps more. But to work on our chest, you know, we want to be using a technique where we feel it in our chest the most. We don't always want to go straight to actual failure because that's tiring, you know, adds a lot of like fatigue and stress on our body. What's probably best is that we train, you know, between 1 or 2 reps close to failure. So we're doing it safely. Now, if we're getting close to failure, we are causing, you know, some, you know, change in homeostasis in our muscles. We are causing some muscle disruption, you know, maybe muscle damage is a nice way to think about it. That's what's actually happening deep down. So when we go to do another set, we can't expect our body to be able to do 100% of what we've just done. And if we were able to do 100% of what we've just done, well, then that's a really clear way to say you didn't train close to failure because you didn't cause any tissue disruption. So And then as we progress, if you are able to continuously do the same as what you did prior, that is a surefire way to say, well, you didn't get anywhere near technical failure because you didn't cause any tissue disruption because you're able to do the same amount of performance as what you did just before. So the point here is that if you're not experiencing decrease in repetitions between your sets, you're probably not training close to technical failure. Then the question is, okay, well, how much of a decrease in repetitions is significant? Because if we, you know, decrease our reps by one, or do we decrease our reps by, you know, 50%, you know, they're two very big numbers. If you find that you're using a load and training at such a high effort and intensity that maybe you're able to do, let's say, 15 repetitions, but then the next set, you're only able to do 5 repetitions. Okay, the first set that you did, you trained at a intensity that was just too high and it caused so much fatigue that in the next set, you decreased by too much. You know, you're only able to do 5 repetitions. But on the other side, if you did, let's say, 15 repetitions and then the next set you're able to do 14 repetitions, okay, again, maybe your intensity was too low where you're unable to cause enough tissue disruption, or in that second set, you were using pseudo progression techniques such as maybe cheating some reps, using momentum, cutting the rep short, changing your tempo, those types of things to kind of get more reps in without it being stimulative. The best way that we can measure the inter-set fatigue is through other studies on velocity training. So velocity meaning how quick we move weights. And what some of these studies suggest is that between reps from rep one towards failure, we want to see a decrease in 20% of the speed that we move. So if you're moving, you know, rep number one at, you know, 100 units of speed, as we move towards the end, you know, we're moving it at maybe 80 units of speed. So decreasing the amount of speed that we're using because we're getting tired. And you may experience that, you know, rep number one, it moves like butter, it's super speedy, but then rep number 6 or 7, oh geez, it's a bit of a grind. Okay. So if we use that number of about 20%, that's kind of the decrease that we want to see in between sets. So in your training, a nice way to look at that training bout is that idea of maybe 12 repetitions, 10 repetitions, 8 repetitions between the 3 sets. If you're consistently able to do 12, 12, and 12, that suggests that one, you weren't training close to failure, or two, you were using, you know, pseudo progression techniques so that you were able to get those reps in, but not actually see a big stimulus. And then when you go to progress, you are unable to progress because you haven't actually got that stimulus on your body. So the whole point of this tip this week is to normalize the idea of decreasing reps. And if your reps aren't decreasing in between sets, maybe you're not training with a good technique. Maybe you're not training at a high skill level, or maybe you're not training at a high effort level to see that stimulus and that change that we want in our body.
That's really good. I think anything to do with shoulders is a good one to test this on, because they can get pretty fatigued pretty quickly. So I say test it on your shoulders this and just see. Because say so anything like an overhead, like dumbbell press, or that'll sort you out pretty quickly.
That's right. That's right. I find that often with like my lower body work, I could always just kind of like bust out more reps. And what ends up, I have to be really disciplined to keep my like technique and my repetitions consistent. Because let's say a squat, if I wanted to, I could like mentally bust out more reps, but then, you know, maybe my torso tilts forward, my tempo changes. I do like the older, the stripper squat where you just bounce yourself down and bounce yourself back up. So,
people dancing back in the 90s. Yeah.
So, you know, I have to be really disciplined with those types of things. And that's like the point of training, is to have that discipline in our body and being as consistent as we can. Because if we have lots of moving parts, well, you know, we can't expect a big controlled change in our body if we're just kind of like throwing lots of things at it.
Definitely. Very good. I hope everybody listens to this.
Nick, let's move on to some questions from our community. Okay, so the first one here is a question that I found on Facebook, and it is, I've been skipping some of the food on the template, especially the snacks. Is it important to try to eat everything for metabolism, or is it good to eat less calories? Nick, what advice would you give this person?
Okay, so if this person came to me and said that they were skipping, I would say, firstly, I would try and unpack a little bit as to why. because there's a difference between skipping because you are trying to consume less calories versus skipping because you actually are not wanting to stuff your face because you feel like you're actually satiated, you're not hungry. So we're talking about snacks here as well. And not everybody is wired to want snacks. So let me just say that, you know, you can have meals, you don't have to have snacks. But in terms of the really important thing here is to understand the is it good to eat less calories thing. In what context? Because we have designed the template for your calories to be pretty much exactly where they need to be at the time. Now, everybody will tell you it's good to eat less calories, but you are on a certain amount of calories to hit those calories to see if you can lose body weight on those calories. The calculations are pretty much predicting that you will. The calories will then drop over the next bit. So what are you doing? You're pre-dropping your calories and then there's nowhere for you to go. And I'm not trying to scare you because I'm sure that you'll be fine. Just eat your snacks. But it's periodized. It's done in a way that you are going to progress with that. You may not even need to drop your calories. You may still see weight loss as we talk about. And the metabolism thing, personally, I think, it's important to keep eating, but nothing's going to happen to you if you don't have your snacks. But I think it's really important to just stay within your calorie target. That's why it's there. So, and just remember, it will get taken away from you as we progress in the challenge. So you want to be able to hit those numbers and just also, get yourself primed. I suppose it's metabolism, but get yourself primed to the point where when a calorie drop happens, your body's going to react to that. Because if you've already pre-dropped, then, you will adapt to that and then you'll have to drop even lower to the point where, I mean, this is excessive, but it will get ridiculous. You won't be able to sustain that. So that's unpleasant too. And then you'll remember your experience and go, I might have lost a lot of weight, but, I had to starve myself. So that's not what we want. That's unsustainable. It doesn't matter if you think you're the one exception to the rule. You are not. You need to eat what you've been told. Oh, gosh, I sound like I'm talking to my kids. Eat what you've been told to eat. But, in terms of a snack, if you're not a snacker, why don't you try and incorporate some of the calories from your snacks into your main meals? You know, it could be a serving of cheese. You know, chuck a piece of cheese on something. It's not as bad as you think. And also for somebody who, if you're talking about because you're not hungry, which I don't think this person is, just make your foods a little bit more calorie dense. You know, you can actually have like 3 spoons of peanut butter and get half your caloric intake for the day. We've spoken about that before. So no, in your case, it's not good to eat less calories. I want you to keep eating. Thank you very much.
I like it. It's good advice.
Yeah, thanks.
Nick, next question here. Is there anyone else doing the fat loss program that is finding their weight is going up? The first week I had some decent loss with a few fluctuations, but this week my weight has been going up most days. I'm trying not to focus on the scales because I know it's not everything. Just curious if anyone else is having the same problem. Okay, let's talk about this. So first thing I'd say is that it's not like a problem. I mean, it can suggest certain things, but, you know, problem is a strong word. So let's unpack it a little bit. So weight fluctuations are completely normal, and it sounds like this individual has experienced it in the first week with some fluctuations. Weight fluctuations mainly occur because of two factors, one being gut retention. So things that we've consumed, if I have, a big old salad, that salad is going through my digestive system. So that gut residue is still in my body. So that's going to impact my scale weight. And then next, probably the big one would be fluid retention. So that could be simply water. If I'm drinking more water, I'm going to have more water in my body. Other factors that can influence fluid retention are things like salt, things like training. You know, when you go and train, you genuinely have inflammation in your body because you've caused tissue disruption. Women on our cycles, our time of the month is going to affect our fluid retention. And then also things like stress. You know, if you've had poor sleep, these things are going to impact how much fluid we retain. So that's our weight fluctuations. That's one part of the conversation. But this individual has said that they're finding their weight actually increasing. Okay. And there are a few things that could be contributing to that. So number one, could be that they've started a creatine cycle. So creatine causes more fluid to be stored in our muscle. So the muscle actually is bigger because it has more fluid in there. And because of that fluid, it has more nutrients. So these are all awesome things. But then what we find is that the scale weight increases, the body composition gets better because you have bigger muscle, but then it can cause a little bit of anxiety because, well, I'm heavier on the scales. Okay, that's one part of the conversation. The next could be that this individual is eating more fruits and vegetables than they normally do. So maybe prior to the challenge, they were consuming, let's say, 500 grams of fruits and vegetables throughout the day. Then now they're consuming 1.5 kilos of fruits and vegetables throughout the day. Those foods are high in fiber. That food is still in their gut as they're going onto the scales. So they're now heavier on the scales. Then the next factor that could be contributing is that they're simply consuming more water. You know, often in the challenge, we're advising people to drink more water, maybe because they're exercising more, or you know, they weren't consuming much water before. And a similar example could be that they were consuming 500 milliliters of water a day, and now they're trying to consume 2 to 3 liters of water a day. So that's going to be more, you know, volume of fluid in their body. So they may be experiencing some increase in weight. But look, the big one here is that we do need to use that number on the scale as data to suggest if our strategy is working. So like we've already said in this podcast here, if your scale weight, if you're trying to lose fat and your scale weight is the same or it's increasing and it's consistently increasing, like you can say confidently, Steve, I've measured myself every single day, and on average, I am increasing my body weight and my goal is weight loss. Then we go, okay, well, you're not losing weight. You're gaining weight. You are consuming too many calories or too much energy for what your body needs. And the strategy that you're using is not working. And there's no point in trying to change the metric that we look at. So if you're thinking, oh, well, my scale weight's going up, I'm just going to be, cognitively dissonant to it, you know, just push it to the side and not think about my scale weight and maybe look at another metric going, oh, maybe I'll check my measurements instead. Well, you're just completely ignoring something. It's like, you know, you're trying to save up to buy a house, right? You're trying to save up to buy a house, trying to get a deposit. And, you know, you're looking at your bank balance and your savings account isn't going up. You can either go, okay, well, my saving strategy isn't working. I'm spending too much of my money on, you know, eating out or, you know, Ubers or smashed Abba, as our good millennials like to consume. You're either choosing to ignore that savings account and going, oh, well, I'm just going to look at another metric of like, you know, how, I don't know, big my wallet looks on a particular day. Or you go, okay, my strategy that I'm using right now isn't working to save money to buy a house. And it's the exact same concept when we're trying to lose weight. Whatever strategy you're doing, if you are gaining weight, while you're gaining weight, you're not moving towards your goal. You may need to reassess your strategy. Okay, I'm actually being adherent to it. Am I having a few spoons of peanut butter that I'm not telling anybody about? Am I actually doing less steps than what I'm actually trying to do? Am I, you know, taking out the gym? Am I, you know, doing all these things that, you know, aren't really within the strategy that we're trying to imply? Or maybe you are doing everything perfectly and we need to change the strategy. Maybe you need to decrease your calorie intake or increase your step counts. So remember that it is just information. It's just data. It's telling us a story about what's happening to our body. Okay.
Yeah. And the thing is, people often will say, oh, my scale weight didn't budge. And then I figured out that I did something. And then now it's now moving. And it's okay. It's okay to question, to wonder, and also, it is okay to weigh yourself and it's okay to be heavier. It's okay. But it's, if you don't want to be consistently, then we need to do something about it.
That's right. Yeah. Nick, next question here is anyone else suffering serious cravings? Mm-hmm. Went past the bakery and was greeted by meat pies. Then went into the shops to see apple turnover, then the chips aisle, and last but not least, licorice bullets. Resisted, but man, it was tough. Does this mean I'm lacking something in my diet or is it a good sign? Any advice would be helpful. Nick, what advice would you give this individual?
Here is my advice. The thing is, the foods that you've mentioned there are extremely energy dense foods. So if you're in a calorie deficit, It just means that your body is trying to grab something that you can quickly have that's going to replenish it, and it won't be suffering anymore. Not that it's suffering, but if you're, you know, consuming less calories and you're burning, it's going to start to feel a little bit uncomfortable, and you are going to be drawn naturally to those really energy dense foods. You know, you have to train yourself pretty hard to be in a very big calorie deficit and want a carrot. You know, like you have to have bunnies like I do with lots of carrots on hand, you know, and you learn all your snack treats. Like people that are in comp prep will have something weird like a cucumber with stevia or something to replicate the taste of the sweetness and the things. It's really just that I really don't want to go into saying, oh gosh, well, licorice may have some magnesium in it and you're deficient in that, because you're not. I mean, you're going to be eating probably more veggies and fruits than you've ever eaten in your life. So I would say it's just that cognitive thing, that thing where you go, wait a minute, your brain, you know that something like that's going to basically give you a whole whack of calories, and your body is actually saying, I want those calories because I don't want to struggle. I want to stay where I am. And that meat pie is going, you stay where you are. And then you're walking past it going, no, I want to be different. So a meat pie isn't really a meat pie. It's just probably 3/4 of your calorie allowance for the day sitting there going, eat me.
So, and it's picturing the meat pie having a little mouth going, eat me.
So you've done well by walking past it. There's nothing wrong with you. There's there's nothing like, it's not like a pregnancy craving, you know, where, I mean, I had a weird one, you know, those pregnancy cravings called pica. I wanted to eat Vicks Vapor Rub. So that was weird because all I did was smell it all the time. So that's just another story. But something like this is just a mental thing where, you know, that's very energy dense. It's filling. It might be something that has previously satisfied you. You know, you've mentioned specific things. There are obviously things that you like the taste of. Anything that's a licorice ball or something like that is a lolly. It's, you know, it's something that you can shove in your mouth, and, you know, people use it, that sort of stuff, when they're climbing mountains as scroggin. You know, it's energy dense. So I suppose it is a good sign because it means you're in a calorie deficit. So keep being in that deficit if you want to lose that body weight.
Yeah, good advice. The only thing I would add in is that the foods that you've written down here is meat pies. We've got apple turnover, the chip aisle, and licorice bullets. And many of those foods are really high in sodium or salt. Okay. Yeah. And for many of us, you know, we love salty food. I don't know. Salty food mixed in with some generous dosing of carbohydrate mixed in with fat. So, you know, meat pie, we've got the pastry and then the fat from the meat. You've got the apple turnover, you've got the pastry, you've got the fat and the carb mixed in together, chips, you know, you got your fat and carb mixed in together, fat, carb, and sodium. Gosh, what a tasty food. Look, some individuals and some coaches would be like, oh, geez, you are craving some salty food. Maybe you need to have more salt. I wouldn't say so. I wouldn't say that you need to be, you know, you're not craving salt because you need more salt. I would say that you simply love those foods, and gosh, who wouldn't love those foods, because it's making my mouth water thinking about them. So I think for this individual, as best as they can, you know, try to avoid those environmental situations where you're staring at those foods, because gosh, when we move into weeks 5 to 8 and 9 to 12, when the calories get low, if you are exposed to that meat pie every other day, eventually you're going to give in to that meat pie. So sometimes we can't, but if you can, as best as you can, try to avoid those environmental situations, because we're eventually going to give in. No matter how iron will your discipline is, we're just human. We eventually give in and we don't tell anybody about it.
Yeah. Well, you know what? The other thing is, I was just thinking, so you don't have a massive blowout after the challenge, because that would be really frustrating for you. Try and think of some ways to recreate some of these foods in a kind of more sustainable way. So I know that people have pie makers. I know that they use the sandwich thins. I know you could probably use some mince for it. And if you're really after a pie, that'd be a way to kind of get that pie happening. Let me see. Licorice bullets, I'm not sure of. I don't know how to recreate that. Some fennel. And then, yeah, so an apple turnover, I suppose that's the same kind of deal. You know, you could have a fresh apple and chuck it into a pie maker. Like, I'm not the best cook.
No.
But what I'm saying is, yeah, just think of some sustainable ways to move forward even beyond the 12 weeks to possibly make those foods not so scary, you know, and forbidden.
That's right. That's right. Even like chips, you know, you can, you know, portion out a serving of potato. We know potato really high in energy. So you could portion out a serving of potato and you could utilize, you know, really cool kitchen utensils like an air fryer, and you could fry up, you know, potato crisps, you know, a little bit of salt on the top or whatever other flavor you like. And, you know, you could enjoy chips in a portion control way. You may find that you can only consume a small amount of chips than what you used to. But if that helps to, you know, quench the craving, that kind of gets us through the dieting process. And then, you know, maybe after the diet, you're right, you can make some better choices around foods and still enjoy foods that, you know, we love. We're human. It's okay to eat these foods. You're not a bad person if you crave these foods. It's about managing what we kind of want to eat, right? Portion control.
And I do think that now's the time, if you've got it in you, to prepare for the future, to, you know, protect the downside and go, wait a minute, what's going to happen after the 12 weeks? How do I build these foods into my plan? And I can't tell you how to build a real meat pie into your plan, but I can tell you that heaps of people have great advice about making things that look like that.
That's right.
Taste like that.
Nick, last question here, which was pulled from our forum. And this question is, gee, I hope this isn't a stupid question, but it really threw me today. First thing I'd say about this is that there's no such thing as a stupid question or a bad question or a silly question or anything like that. You know, they're just questions. And I'm sure that there are many people thinking about this question too. This person writes, I've got an Apple Watch and it has a move function that tracks my energy out, supposedly, this person writes. And it was only today I realized that it was set in kilojoules and not in kilocalories, or calories as we call them. So I changed it, and according to it, I've only burnt 456 calories. This is after doing over 10,000 steps and a hard leg session in the morning and standing for over 13 hours of the day. Surely this can't be right. I want to ignore it, but it's derailed me a bit today. All right, let's talk about it. So the first thing we'll talk about, the Apple Watch or most smart devices, is that they often try to break down your energy expenditure to different categories. So they might say something like your basal metabolic rate. So that's the amount of energy that you need to expend by just sitting. So if you were like literally laying in bed all day, you would need to expend a certain amount of energy for your heart to pump, your brain to function, you know, things that your body needs to do, right? Then they would have something like what they're suggesting, the move function. So how much energy you expended through movement throughout the day. And they may even break that down further into energy expenditure expended throughout the day versus energy expended while exercising. Okay. So they may have a few different categories, and this number that you're looking at, 456, might be a number that they're saying that you expended through, you know, maybe exercise specifically. So for this person where they're like, well, I've done 10,000 steps, a hard leg session, and I've been standing for 13 hours today. That 456 calories may be exercise, energy expended via exercise, and your Apple Watch might be calculating it as, you know, certain times where your heart rate was over a certain beats per minute, and your step count was at a certain cadence per minute, and then also, you know, other factors that are, you know, quite sophisticated in these devices. So that number might not be telling the whole story, because it might be under a certain criteria that is specific for that Apple Watch. Okay. So first thing I would say is don't get super caught up in that specific number, because there might be other numbers if you swipe to other pages. Okay. The next thing, when we're looking at smartwatches in general as a whole, we do know that they're quite sophisticated. They're pretty cool, but the technology isn't there yet. So we know, and we've seen it in studies, where some smart devices, especially with energy expenditure, so how many calories you, quote, burnt throughout the day, they can be off by up to 50%. So a huge amount off. So, you know, this case, 456 calories, you may have only burnt, you know, 200 calories, or you may have only burnt, you know, or you, not only, but you, on the other end, you could have burnt 600 calories because we don't know, because it could have been off by a massive amount. So my advice would be, don't get too caught up with the energy expenditure that your smartwatch suggests to you, because there's a high chance that that number is incorrect. Yeah, it's cool to track that number every day, because if we're consistently incorrect, then we know the consistent trend. So if on a certain day, it's saying that you expended 456 calories, but then the next day it says that you expended 500 calories, that could suggest that you've expended more calories than the day prior, regardless on what that number actually is. So even if it was 250 and then 300 calories, but your smart device says 450, 500 calories, you know, if we look past those numbers and just see the trend, okay, you've expended more energy according to this smart device. Yeah, there's more conversation to that where we go, okay, did it measure it by cadence, or did it measure it by your heart rate, or did it measure it by determining that you were doing an exercise because you clicked start workout versus, you know, other factors. So yeah, okay, there's other parts of that conversation, but the general trend, it could be helpful information for you. Heck, even the step counts on some of these smart devices can be off by up to like 10-20%. So that could be the difference of the smart device saying that you did 8,000 steps, 10,000 steps, or 12,000 steps by just what smart device you use. Again, the best way that we can measure out some of these inaccuracies is to be consistent with it. You know, track it over time, use the same device over time. So regardless if you're doing 8,000 steps on your smart, you know, your Apple Watch versus 8,000 steps on your Fitbit versus 8,000 steps on a Garmin, if you were consistently wearing the same type of watch, we can get a consistent number and work on trying to increase that number over time. Okay. The final thing I'd say to this individual is that, sure, to change our body composition is mainly a math problem of about energy in versus energy out. It's not wise to track our energy out in terms of calories expended, because, you know, when we start putting it on paper and going, well, my Apple Watch said that I burnt, you know, X amount of calories and I've consumed X amount of calories. That means I've worked out the difference of this much. That means I could consume this much more food. So that stay within this math problem. That's when we start facing problems, because we don't know accurately how many calories we've expended. Heck, we don't even know accurately how many calories we've ingested and absorbed, right? And it's better to track our energy expenditure purely by our overall step count, whatever that is, and then purely by what we perceive as our energy intake, whatever that is. Give those two numbers maybe like an algebra equation of, you know, X and Y, and then work on either increasing or decreasing those two numbers, regardless of what those numbers actually are, because, you know, what those numbers actually are doesn't really matter, because if you're, let's say 150 centimeters versus 180 centimeters, your step count's going to be different. So if you do 10,000 steps, regardless of your height, they're going to be two different numbers, two different units of energy expenditure. Okay. But main takeaway is, don't get too caught up in some of these numbers. They can be slightly misleading. Useful, awesome technology, not as sophisticated as we want them to be yet. And I have lots of hope for wearable technology, especially things like Aura rings. I think they're going to be really cool, especially if we keep working on them, making them better. But in due time, they will probably be the coolest thing going around.
Yeah, I agree. I like mine, but yeah, for all the reasons that you said, I have to just look at it as some consistent data that is actually incorrect, but it's something. And like, if I'm walking with my mum and we're doing an hour and a half walk and it's 10,000 steps for me, it may be 7,000 for her. So we've done exactly the same walk. She's just, it's the other way around. Sorry, she does more because she's tiny. So she has to scuttle to keep up. So one of my steps is about 10 of hers. So yeah.
No, so good. Look, Nick, let's wrap it up there for episode number 52 on Valentine's Day. If you like this episode, check out our 51 other episodes. And Nick, you know what's really cool about 52 episodes? There's 52 weeks in a year. So we have a whole year's worth of content here, Nick. How awesome is that?
I'm glad you said it, because I was going to say it before. That's why, you know, we're on the same wavelength. 1 year.
1 year. 1 year with a short little break in there, but we've got 52 weeks of content here. So if you like this episode, yes, go check out the 51 other episodes, and we'll catch you next week for episode number 53.
That's right.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. If you like the show, share it with a friend.
Or leave us a review on iTunes to spread the good word. See you next time.